Amazing.
That is amazing.
Amazing.
Amazing. Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing.
Welcome to the Father State. I'm Jesse Lee Peterson. Before I get to my guest, we are scheduled to tape three brand new episodes of the Father State today. At the last minute, our second hour guest canceled on us without notice. We had two Mexicans coming who are liberals. One is Dr. Jake Benifla, and he is the founder and executive director for the Center a Multicultural Science, and also Lucy Flores, founder member of the Nevada State Assembly and founder of Loose Collective. They canceled at the very last minute by sending an email, and Dr. Benifla said that he was advised not to do the show. Cowards! I bring that to your attention because I want you to know liberals are cowards. And there's no reason to be afraid of name calling. Let them call you whatever they want. Don't let them intimidate you because they really don't have any courage at all. And so these two people are cowards. Beta male and beta female. But I have with me a young lady I've been looking forward to speaking to for a long time. Today my guest is here all the way from the UK. I have with me Katie Hopkins, columnist at the Rebel radio show host, and best-selling author. Katie, thank you so much for coming in.
No, not at all. It's my pleasure. And I really dislike it when people cancel when they've agreed to come. I think it's very weak, and particularly doing it by email. At least have the courage to call
That's
someone,
right.
you know?
And the last minute. We could have found someone else to take the place.
Yeah, of course. No.
My mother's name was Katie. Such a nice name.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I think it's a little, I don't know what it is. I've used it in Starbucks here a couple of times. And they kind of have a little, it sounds like it's, I'm a little stranger in the district because I don't think that many people are called Katie.
Right. I was going to say it might be because we don't hear that name anymore for the most part.
No, I get that. Yes.
Isn't that amazing? I have a lot of good questions for you. Number one, are you a Christian?
Yes. I describe myself as a white Christian conservative woman.
Right on.
And as such, I say that I'm kind of an endangered species where I come from.
And here it started to happen here too.
Yeah, I think so. And I kind of feel like I'm up there with the kind of the black rhino, and he has an advantage because he's black. That's where I come from, right? Being white is a tough gig where I am.
I know all about that. Do you believe that human beings are in a fallen state?
I think two sides to that. Firstly, I think where I live, my country, you know, the United Kingdom, is a fallen state in its truest definition. It breaks my heart that my country has fallen so far. And I'm not somebody that is just out to criticize their country as people burn flags or whatever. I signed up to be part of the British military. I went through Sandhurst, which is like your West Point, but
right
better. I had a 35-year degree, a regular commission with the armed forces in the intelligence corps. So I love my country to the point I wanted to fight for my country and to watch my country become this sad kind of failure and a failed experiment for multiculturalism and a complete takeover by Islam is heartbreaking, and it's the reason I come to America to say, do not fall as we have fallen.
When did it start to fall? How and why?
I think this idea of multiculturalism, it was a great notion, and it was based on something fantastic. When we had our first generation migrants that came to the UK from India, from all different countries across the world, they came because they wanted to be part of something, to work hard, to create a better environment for their families. They're amazing people, these 60 and 70 year olds that have created and raised their families as part of being British. They are truly ambassadors for Britain and ambassadors for migrants everywhere. I love them dearly. But Then we had mandatory multiculturalism, where we continued to have open borders, mass migration, and we created a system that instead of asking people or welcoming people who wanted to integrate, we continued to welcome vast numbers of people who did not want to be part of our culture, who did not want anything, in fact, actively disagree with Western culture and Western values and want to live in isolation from us. And that's where it all went wrong. And I think Angela Merkel most recently opening up Europe and saying, wir schaffen das, we can do this, and telling everyone to come. You know, our country has been completely overrun. And the Islamic community is now so strong and so numerous and growing so quickly. In 20 years, I'm a minority in my own country.
Amazing.
And they want nothing to do with us.
Yes.
And so instead of multiculturalism, that's just a... It's an illusion, it's a notion, and it's not true. We live in ghettos, ghettos of separate cultures, many of whom actively hate each other.
Yeah.
And that's the truth, as I perceive it, in the UK today.
That's happening here, too. The first immigrants or migrants who enter into the UK, did they come legally or illegally?
Yes. No, they came legally.
Yeah.
They worked incredibly hard to come here, and they were the sort of... The bastions, they were almost held up, still are actually, held up as those individuals who would work harder than British people, who would work the longest hours, whose children worked the hardest in school, outperforming our children because they were just so grateful to have the opportunity.
Yes.
They were amazing ambassadors. And what's been so upsetting, I spend quite a bit of time with these older generation migrants, is they're so disappointed by the recent arrivals because it's giving everybody a bad name and it's really diminishing the UK, you know, and we
Amazing.
Now have, yeah, we have a situation really where, you know, we just had a ruling from Europe that the rights of Muslim communities not to be offended is greater than the rights of someone like myself to speak freely.
That's amazing.
This is a start of kind of de facto Sharia blasphemy laws in the UK.
Why do the white men of the UK, along with the white Christian women, sit back and just allow this to happen? Do they? Why don't they not fight back with truth and vote in people who can do something about this or who will do something about it?
And I think it's partly because, and I understand, I'm a mum of three children, and I have a husband. It always surprises people to find out I'm actually married, that someone's tolerating me.
I never knew you were married.
Well, exactly. It's a surprise.
That's amazing.
I know, most
How
people
did that
think
happen?
I'm a lesbian because I have short hair. There's this idea, if you have short hair, you're definitely a lesbian. So I was at a hairdresser's the other day, actually, and the hairdresser thought I was a Democrat because I have short hair and therefore I'm a lesbian, which is like a weird assumption. So I have a husband, I have children, I just have short hair, and those are two different things.
Right.
Yeah, but anyhow, Amazing. Not to get off the point, is that as a mum, I understand for many families, they would probably love to speak out. I get emails all the time from people who say, keep going, you say the stuff I'm desperate to say, you say the stuff, keep right. going, because they can't, because if you even... say your opinion in the UK, you lose your job. I mean, you know how it is here.
It's happening here.
There's so many secret conservatives here
yes.
that stop me in the streets
yes.
to say, keep going, because we can't say it because we'll lose our jobs.
Well, that's a horrible mistake.
I know.
Though, because what happened, as it happened here with white Americans, they were afraid to speak out against liberal blacks and those who were calling them racist. Mm. And so years and years have gone by, and the white children, even today, are now suffering because the parents didn't speak up. And these white kids in the universities, they, if they spoke up, they were called racist, they were kicked out of school. Had the parents spoken up years ago, the kids would not be suffering it today.
I absolutely agree with you. And there is a frustration in me. You know, sometimes, well, often, you know, people will say, I don't agree with everything you say, but I really like you. I really like what you do. And I feel cross with those people a little, even though they're being supportive, because
yes.
I want to say, I never asked you to agree with everything I said.
That's right.
Do not start the sentence with, I don't agree with everything you say, but, because I never asked you to agree with
That's
everything
very good
I said.
Point.
I am happy, you and I would be happy, if we disagreed on everything,
That's right.
but we can still sit here like regular adults and chat. So I think people have to take some level of ownership about not trying to excuse themselves before they even dare to have an opinion.
That's right.
People have to kind of man up a little bit.
Absolutely. What do you think of men, and in this particular case, white men who are afraid to speak up, who allow their families to be having to live in fear because the fathers didn't speak up. What do you think of white men who don't speak up?
It is a real problem, and we've seen, you know, white men. I know there's a good number of strong white males out there, even in the UK as well. I know they're out there and they want to fight back, and there's even talks of, in the UK, because things are so dire, this kind of the start of the militias, the sort of start of, you know, semi-organized groups of individuals who are talking about creating a kind of police network where they're going to start walking the streets of London, because London is now such a high crime place and our police are doing nothing about it. So I know we have strong men out there, but I think we have lost this ability to accept being called a name and saying, that's okay, I know I'm not that
person. That's right.
To be called, I'm called Islamophobe. If we looked at, I don't know, some people look at Wikipedia, which is a terrible idea. But like, I'm an Islamophobe, I'm a racist, I'm a misogynist, I'm a, a supremacist, all of those things. And you have to say, okay, I'll accept those labels from you, I'll continue, and I know who I am. And as long as I know who I am, it doesn't matter the labels you throw on me.
Right.
But I think it comes down to, you know, this idea, and I think our schools do it too. Everybody wants to be liked. And I never know where we got that from.
Yeah.
Where do we get that notion from that being liked is more important than having principles that you'll stand by? And sometimes you have to not be liked to make unpopular decisions, but that are the right decisions.
I think that starts in the home when the parents treat one child better than the other instead of treating them equally. And so the child that is not getting the same treatment tends to try to prove themselves to the parent that, you know what, I can do it too. I'm as good as my brother or sister. They're trying to be liked by that parent. And if it doesn't work, as they become adults, they go out into the world trying to appease people so that they can be liked.
I think so. And I also think it used to be that I want to be liked, or I want to receive validation, you know.
Yeah.
And so it used to be, and I still feel this way, you do that by doing hard things. So you do that by doing the marathon, or you do that by, you know, passing out of the academy,
right.
Or you do it by having, as I have had, both your arms dislocated, but you still get to where you need to get to. You do it by doing the hard thing. What I notice with the latest generation so often is they don't look for validation by doing the hard thing. They look for validation by trying to be the biggest victim.
Yes.
And whether that's because I've now decided today I'm a man and so I am now one of the trans movement, or I am going to be a victim because of my sexuality or my colour or my eating preferences. You know, I'm a vegan, I'm a lactose intolerant. All of these bizarre ways of deciding that you could get validation because anything that makes me special because I've got bigger needs, greater needs than you. And that's the opposite of what we need to teach our
kids. That's
right. Amazing. Do stuff by being tougher than,
that's
better
than. I have been, you know, been called the N-word, Uncle Tom, sellout. Mm. I even had the Coon Award given to me. But because I don't have that fear, I love what's right with all my heart, soul, and might. I know that it's not about color, it's not about male or female, it's good versus evil, right versus wrong. I don't have that fear, so I love my country, I stand up for my country.
Mm, and I bet people love you. I bet you get support
on
the street when
all
you
over
walk
the world,
around.
Really. Absolutely.
You know, because it's critical. Well, it's something I've noticed after the midterms is I keep reading or seeing the first female, blah, blah, blah. The first black, blah, blah, blah. The first Muslim, blah, blah, blah. And I just think, what the hell that got to do with the job you need to go and do in Congress or the House or Senate? Who you are in terms of your color or your sexuality makes no difference.
That's right.
Do not report me on the basis of some thing, some identification matter. Tell me what you're going to do. Tell me what your policies are.
Amazing.
Don't tell me what sex you are.
I have a good example of that. We just had an election here, as you
know.
Yeah,
of course.
And two Muslim women won Congress as in their district. I don't know where they're from.
I saw them waving the flag of Palestine.
Yeah.
So I'll just get
amazing?
The T-shirt out.
And then they gave they gave a speech, and in the speech, one of them said, I haven't heard the second person yet, but she said, oh, I never imagined a person like me could ever become.
Yeah, I had that.
And then, I'm saying this woman should not be representing the United States. She should not be in Congress.
Not a
chance.
With
that kind of attitude.
It terrifies me. She was waving the Palestinian flag And she said, to your point, she said, as a proud Palestinian.
Yes.
And then American. And then it was all about me. I was like, this is the craziness.
It sure
and for
is.
Me, it breaks my heart because I see it starting. I've spent a lot of time campaigning in Minnesota, in Michigan, because I see where this starts. Yeah. My country has played this out already, because once you have Islam in power, political Islam in power, people voting according to their religion, not according to policy, power, money, centralized behind that religion, a densely packed population who all have the same faith, which is Islam, it is a terrifying thing, and you cannot break back in. It is lost now. Michigan, to me, all of those states, Minnesota, you know, they are lost, and they are rapidly coming behind us in the UK in the fall. And it's trying to stop the fall of America.
Amazing.
And that's where, to me, the rot sets in. And we have it, if we're looking for an example to contrast in London, with our Muslim mayor, who is now secure, despite a terrible track record, is secure because the population of London is majority Muslim.
Is this the same Muslim mayor that is suing you?
That's the same one? That's a different
tell us about.
Mayor
I read about
me.
That, and I was so excited. tell us about this mayor, Muslim mayor, who's upset
she's not.
At you.
She's not actually a Muslim. The mayor that's suing me is different to the mayor that hates me in London. But you know, all mayors hate me, I embrace their hatred, and I think hate and love are very close together.
That's right.
So I only need to give them a little nudge, and then they'll love me.
That's right.
Right. I just need to change them around. Anyway, what happened was, I go around the world to see things for myself. That's why I'm here.
Yes.
I was just in Poland because Poland is fantastic. I was just in Germany because we just managed to get Merkel kicked out, which is a beautiful day.
That's right.
So I go around the world because I believe that our media has lost its way. And the way I like to operate is I like to show truths on the road as I see them. And if I just show people, here's a market in Belgium, it was Belgium. Here's the market in Belgium, and it is entirely full of Moroccans. It is Moroccans in full headscarves, burqas, full dress, and people cannot get their heads around that is Belgium because it looks like Morocco. And that's how I work. That's my journalism. That's what I like to do, is just, without adding commentary necessarily, show people the truths from the road. So I went to Belgium because there's a town there and it's known as the jihadi capital of Europe. It's called Molenbeek. And out of that one, it's the tiniest place. And it's right next to the EU Parliament, all of kind of suits and ties and all of it. It's the jihadi capital. And out of that tiny place came the Paris attacker.
Yes.
Came all. If you could think of a terror attack, they came from Molenbeek. And I found the mayor. And she was told, she's not a Muslim, but she was told where the Paris attacker lived. She was given the address, she was told they were planning an attack, and she did nothing.
Amazing.
And when I got a hold of her, and I didn't physically get a hold of her, though I really
You happened
her.
To see her on the street somewhere, right?
She bumped into me, and she told me, she didn't know who I was, it was very unfortunate for her. I was sitting on a bench, and she told me not to sit on the bench because it was dirty, which I kind of wanted to say, well, you're the mayor, you should be cleaning this up. Anyway, she came to me, and then I realized who she was, and I kind of got a hold of her, and I was like, you knew, you were told, you had the list, you had his address, you did nothing. And she said, it was not my job.
Wow.
It was not my job. And those Paris attackers went on to do the Bataclan, that horrible, horrible, the scenes there, it was a massive slaughter.
I never forget that, it was terrible.
And she isn't a Muslim mayor, she's a mayor, but she needs the votes of the Muslims, because it's a majority Muslim population. And this is precisely my point. Once you have politicians who are dependent on the Muslim vote, they are then placating the Muslim community.
Yes.
And so you have terrorists, as a specific example, who are left to carry on and slaughter our daughters because they put the power of votes over the safety of our children.
Yes.
And because of all of this, and it went on to mainstream news, it went on to Fox, it went as a sort of a viral video, she then sued me for defaming her town, which is called the jihadi capital of Europe. So it's quite hard to defame a town that's already called the jihadi capital of Europe. So that fight goes on. But she was not a powerful woman, and I was pleased I was able to, even if it makes no difference, I was able to challenge her directly and tell her that I thought she was to blame.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm glad you did that.
Yeah, I feel...
That's amazing.
It doesn't bring anyone back.
That's
and
right.
And it doesn't make anything better for those parents that lost their children. But I still feel
at
we need to hold people to account.
Up. That's right. Mm. And so will she be able to get away with this lawsuit? Will she?
No, it looks like she's already backing down, and I'm saying that I'm going back.
So.
And I already know I have people there. There's 25 mosques in a tiny 2 kilometer square area, 25 mosques, some of which are illegal. I already know of two more mosques that are operating illegally, and essentially they fund, money comes through those mosques and is distributed to the community. And I will go back and I will uncover those mosques.
Right on.
And I'm not afraid of her.
She reminds me of the Democrats here
and
the right-o Republicans. They want all these illegals to come in, not because they care about the illegals and they don't care about the American citizens. It's for the vote and the power.
It's for the votes. And this is what really scares me about the two Muslim women elected to Congress, is because, you know, once you link votes to a community that you then need to appease, you'll find that community are given a disproportionate amount of funding because effectively you're buying votes.
Yeah.
Just as in the centre of London, in Trafalgar Square, we had an Eid Day celebration, you know, laid on by the Muslim mayor, paid for by British taxpayers. And it's great if you want to celebrate Eid, but we don't need the centre of London earmarked off for an Eid celebration, in my view. And we even have the Muslim Police Association, you know, a police association that are a Muslim police association. We're very far down the fall.
What is Eid?
Eid is the end of Ramadan. So it's like a big party for the Muslim community. So for you to say what is Eid is interesting, isn't it? Because where I live, Eid is much bigger than Christmas.
Really?
So our Prime Minister doesn't tend to give an Easter message. She didn't give an Easter message. She didn't give, I believe, a Christmas message. But the Eid message she gave, she looked like, it was like a hostage video. She was so just, thank you to our Muslim communities and our friends. She looked, I just wanted to go, Theresa May, blink twice if you're being held. Blink twice if you need help.
Oh.
It was like she had a gun to her head to do this Eid message.
Wow.
It was painful. But that's the feeling. And that's the feeling for, you know, the really sad thing, away from all the kind of, you know, political point scoring and all the kind of I'll fight back stuff, is I get emails from, you know, 75, 80-year-olds. And sometimes it's the first email they've ever sent, because, of course, the internet's nonsense to them.
Right.
And they say, you know, that they maybe even fought in the war or whatever, or they've lived here for all their lives, and that they no longer want to be alive. They're glad their time is nearly up, because they don't want to be here when their country falls.
That's amazing.
And those are the emails, you know, that could get me any time. I get those emails, and it just gives me the shivers now. Because what a terrible thing.
Sure is.
Yeah, that we have created that, that someone's even also emailing me to say, there's no hope and I'm glad I'll be gone.
Someone comes in and take over your home, and now you're helpless to it, defenseless to it, and you would rather just die.
You'd rather die. You know, they used to, like, you know, leave their doors open.
Yeah.
They knew their neighbors. Yeah. They would help each other out. They knew the man in the shop. They knew the guy in the, you know, the grocery store. Now they know no one, and they're isolated, and they're surrounded by communities they don't even recognize, because, of course, we have the full burqa, headscarf, just eyeballs. And for an old, it's hard for me, but for an old person, an elderly person, it's very distressing, actually.
Do you think it will ever turn around?
No.
It's gone forever.
Yeah, we're gone. And I'm, you know, a positive person, a hopeful person.
Right.
I will bring hope wherever I can. But I truly believe the UK is gone. And having spent time in South Africa recently with the white farmers there.
Oh, that's another horrific story.
But the sort of the parallel I wanted to draw is that the white farmers in South Africa, because they're being persecuted, are now actively withdrawing to a defendable space.
Yeah.
They are looking for, and they have found territory that they believe they will now withdraw to and create a massive wall to create a last stand. They say, we will shed our blood, we will die in our boots for our land. And they are making and planning and preparing and training to make a last stand. And so they're ahead of us down that awful path. But I see it in the UK now. I see my fellow Brits, fellow Conservative, fellow those who support a Christian culture, they're moving eastwards So for us, this last stand, this move will be eastwards now. We will push to Eastern Europe. I believe we will leave the UK. My Jewish friends have left the UK. And I think we will make a last stand in Eastern Europe where we will defend the Christian culture. It's
That's a very perverse
situation.
For those who don't know, in South Africa, the government is black now, and they are taking land from the whites there without compensation. They're killing them. It's just a real mess. And so that's what we're talking about here.
A
lot of people are not familiar with that.
No, I agree. And actually, some people call it a neo-Nazi conspiracy theory. I spent 3.5 weeks in South Africa traveling to meet the victims of the attacks on white farmers, to meet survivors, to meet farmers, white farmers in South Africa who were actively under attack. And essentially how it works, the ANC, as you say, have now got land expropriation without compensation,
yes,
which basically means we're taking back the land. And how that translates on the ground with the EFF, the Economic Freedom Fighters, is that black gangs are coming into the white farmers' homes. And it's not just that they are slaughtered, which they inevitably are. There is a long process, and I don't want to go into too much detail because I think it's upsetting for viewers, but 3, 4 hours, 5 hours of torture, of blow tortures, of hot iron being taken to women, of being strung up with the fence wiring and beaten. And I met those individuals, and I think it's just it's unbelievable to me that the world's media won't cover this because the victims are the wrong colour.
They're white.
And in a way, apartheid is still as present in South Africa as it ever was, and the only difference is it's changed from black to white. And that doesn't make it okay, and it doesn't make amends for the past, but nor does vengeance, nor does revenge. So I think one day people will speak up about it, but a serving policeman who agreed to meet with me, as long as he wasn't identified, told me he believes the whites in South Africa have 2 years, and in 2 years there will be no more whites on the land.
Why do you think whites are hated? They're the most hated species on this side of heaven around the world. Why is that?
Well, I suppose in some ways you could argue that we've acted like assholes in the past, and that's how, you know, you'd say in South Africa, apartheid, you know, if you bump into and talk to, and I met a lot of black farm workers, you know, and they get hurt just as much alongside the white farmer that they work for, and it's so upsetting. And they're the most loyal, most devoted farm workers, but those who live in the settlements, those who are angry, young, angry men who were displaced, they want revenge for apartheid. They want revenge for the past. And I can understand that sense of wanting
but
vengeance.
But revenge is never good.
No.
Never good. It doesn't work out for the one who are trying to get the revenge.
No, and almost it doesn't matter what's happened.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if they've lost a job, or doesn't matter if something didn't work out for them. It doesn't matter even if their truck just broke down. Somehow it's always, well, apartheid. It's always apartheid.
They do that here, blame everything on slavery.
Yeah, so here it's
150
slavery.
Years ago. Yeah.
Slavery. And I understand that it's a dreadful thing in the past, but we have to get beyond apartheid, I think.
Yeah, that's right, 100%.
To make that cure. But, you know, I think one story that really, one thing maybe that I can say to help articulate how this isn't just a conspiracy theory. You know, I went to meet Bernard. He is a white farmer, very poor. People say, why don't they leave? Why would they stay?
Couldn't.
They can't leave
right.
because they can't afford to leave. White farmers are incredibly poor.
Yeah, I've interviewed some of them on my show.
Yes.
So, yes.
And Bernard came home from church with his family. Black gangs were waiting for him in his garage when he got home. They strung him up with wire. His wife, they bound. His children, they shot at one of the children who lived, but the shot is still in the wall of their house. And then the children watched as Bernard and their mum were beaten. Bernard's father was hacked to death. And I was sitting with Bernard on the doorstep of his house overlooking his farm. And the shot is still in the wall where they tried to shoot his son, who's 11. And, you know, Bernard said he now trusts in two things. He trusts in God and the land. And there's such, for me, such resonance with Americans that I know who, you know, the land and your God are so fundamental to this country.
Right. Yes.
And Bernard said, apart from those two things, he doesn't trust anything. And his 11-year-old son has tried to commit suicide and wants to die because he believes that bullet was meant for him. His grandfather died, and he said, maybe if I died, my grandfather would have lived. And so that's really the truth of the genocide of the whites, is the children are the ones that also witness all of this. So, and it's very upsetting, but it's also an important story that we talk about and tell.
Yes, absolutely. Two quick questions about that, then I want to move on to some other things here because time is going by. I noticed that white people tend to, wherever they go, they tend to create and build a free society. They're very creative. They just seem to get it all together like no other race of people I know or have seen or heard about. What is it about white people that seem to be unique from all other races? And then they make this horrible mistake of inviting other people to come in who turns out to become to be their enemies. So number one, what is it about white people? They seem to be greater at inventing things. And, you know, I read about the Constitution, and if I'm right, this country is the only country to ever have had a constitution. And that was mind-blowing to me.
I know.
So what is it about white people that have that mentality? How did they get it above all other races?
Partly I don't know, and I definitely can't speak for white people everywhere. I know that, and I will get sorely reprimanded if I was to endeavor to. But I see the Constitution as well.
Yeah.
And I can you imagine all of those hundreds of years ago, people sitting down and deciding the rules that would then exist for all of these hundreds of years. How does that even happen?
Right.
These days, we can't even have a video go up on social media and people are bored of it in 20 seconds. How have we got this amazing book that lived on through those through those years?
I just read that the other day and I'm like, wow, that's amazing.
I
never knew that.
It's one of the things I kind of, it's when I do talks, you know, and I'm pleading with Americans not to become like the UK, I would have that constitution and I would have it in my children's bedside tables. I would have it on the kitchen table.
Yeah.
I would have it projected in big letters on the wall of my house. I think it's so, it's the thing that might save America. The thing that built America is the thing I think that will save America.
That's
because you have your rights written down in the Constitution. And we don't have that. And
that's
you can see us fall. And secondly, your point.
One other, just to add to that, the unfortunate thing, and I know you probably already noticed, but for them, they are not teaching the Constitution to the young in the universities and high schools
or
today.
Or schools,
and
I know.
Public schools.
I know. And why do we not do that? Other religious groups like Islam, who want to aggressively, in my opinion, take over a country, teach their book, and they memorize their
book.
And that Quran is memorized by children from the age of five at their special schools they go to after school. They learn that book.
Yes.
Why? When you guys have this incredible book that is above religion and above any kind of the sense of country, it's about individual freedoms. Why do we not teach that book?
Yeah. When I was growing up, they taught that. I grew up in Alabama on a plantation under the Jim Crow laws, and they taught the Constitution. And they taught it with pride.
Yes.
You know, and I went to all-black school because we were segregated at the time, and they taught it with pride. We don't have that anymore.
No, and that's a tragedy. And then your second point about why do we, when we've built
Why white people are so smart, they build things that are great, and they... First of all, how come white people seem to be smarter in that way than the other cultures?
And then we're so fundamentally stupid.
And then you bring in the enemies,
Yeah, I think
it looks like you're dumb and smart.
We're super dumb. We're super dumb. White people are super dumb. And what happens is, you know, it's a word I actually hate, but it's progressives. You know, I'm so progressive. I'm so progressive, I'm going to take this, but it's like, I'm going to take this mug and smash it because I'm so progressive. And that's what we've done. We take something brilliant that people created because white people like rules. That's my theory on this,
They really do.
We love a rule.
Yes.
And if you go to Germany, where I've just got back from, they love rules so much that on their subway system, they have ticket machines, but they're not even checked. So you don't, in the UK, I think here in America, when you go through to the subway, you have to put your ticket in, don't you, to get into the subway?
Oh, yes, you do. Yeah, okay. I did them in New York. I've not done them
in New York,
here
yeah.
yet.
But in England, to get to the subway, you have to put your ticket in the machine to get through the barrier.
Yes.
In Germany, they don't even have a barrier because Germans are so well behaved and love rules so much, they just buy a ticket.
Really?
Because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
And when you cross a road in Germany, there's an actual rule that you must cross at 90 degrees, otherwise you get a fine. If you cross at 85 degrees, you're fined. And the Germans just love a bloody rule. And so I think that answers why white people are really good at stuff, because we love a rule.
Yeah.
But then we really mess stuff up because someone decides the rule should be broken. We're so progressive, let everybody in. And I think that's where Israel's interesting, because Israel has just created new rules that say we are a Jewish state first, and they want to make it a state full of one type of person.
Yes.
And I think that's an interesting conversation. I'm a big fan of Israel.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
The Father's Day has new merchandise available. Every purchase goes right back to the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Mama Mia, hola, señor. Get off that stage, boy. Quit monkeying around.
It's amazing.
The merch is amazing.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Oh, I was going to ask about your shirt. Oh, it says, I love Israel.
It says, I love Israel.
I love Israel as well.
I know. I wear it to just really annoy Democrats.
Yeah, they hate
it. I wear
that.
It to, like, anywhere where there's, like, Palestinians or Free Palestine events. I wear it exclusively.
Good for you.
Yeah, and I wear it as well as a bit of a kind of, because I think we need to be more honest about our views.
That's right.
And so if I wear this, you know, I know it really annoys, most of my Uber drivers are Muslim gentlemen.
Yes.
So it really annoys Uber drivers. And
oh,
I quite
my
enjoy
God.
That.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And but mostly I like the idea that the Israelis want to defend their nation.
That's
They're
right.
proud.
That's the right thing to do.
They are having, I was in Tel Aviv not very long ago. You know, the amazing Jewish families, they have like 8 or 9 children, which is clearly what you need to do to look after
your
population.
I've been telling white people every day almost on my show, have some babies.
I know, why don't we?
Have babies.
We're so,
and then when they have them, they have 1, maybe 2, that's it.
I've got 3.
3.
So I get a star? Do I get like a gold star?
You do, but you need more.
Oh, come on, I'm exhausted already. I can't be doing more. So I've had 3, I've done my bit, but Jewish people have these, you know, 7, 8 children, and they're so proud to be Jewish, and they have their events, and so every Friday they celebrate, and I love that they build a great big wall to defend themselves,
That's
and not
right.
only do they build a wall above the ground, it goes 20 meters below the ground
That's
as well.
Right.
And if you
right
attack us,
do.
We go, if we're Israelis, and we will burn your house down, and the house of your parents.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. I mean, we give them a warning first, Israelis do, and then they take that house down.
That's right.
No messing.
That's right.
I did that on the radio, right? A piece about Benjamin Netanyahu, who I love, and I should have married. But, and I did this big rant about how I love Israel, and I love their aggressive defense policy, and I love the IDF. And I got a warning from the British state broadcaster to say that I was too pro-Israel.
Really?
Yeah, it was an opinion that wasn't allowed.
Amazing.
Yeah, weird, huh?
That is.
Yeah, they police your views to that extent.
Your freedom of speech.
Yeah.
You got to think and say and speak like them or nothing.
Or nothing.
So that brings me to my next question. I'm a nationalist. But in America today, if you're white, you cannot say you're a nationalist. Are you a nationalist?
I'm a nationalist.
What do you think about the idea that white people in America cannot say that they're a nationalist? President Trump said it. He said, I'm a nationalist. And all hell broke loose. Mm. The children of the lie had a hissy fit.
Liberal tears. Uh-huh. Liberal tears.
Yeah. Racist. And all kind. He supported white supremacy. All kind of stuff they said, but he didn't care.
No. And I think it's a glorious thing. You know, there's some nations that are allowed to be proud of their nationality, I see.
Yeah.
So we have it in the UK. There's a place called Wales. Nobody really knows Wales.
I've heard it.
They're
about
very strange
it.
People.
Yeah.
But they're allowed to be proud of being Welsh. They promote the Welsh language, which nobody uses. They have a Welsh flag, and they're proud to fly it. If we fly a Union flag, our flag, that's seen as racist.
Right.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
So there's some nations that are allowed to be proud of their nationality if they've been approved by progressives, and there's some nations that aren't allowed to be proud of their nationality. And I'm a nationalist. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things I say to people who say, well, we can't say we're nationalists, well, I kind of look at you and say, well, that's partly your doing.
That's right.
Because if you don't say it, you make it so that the next person can't say
that's
it.
That's right.
Unless you're prepared to take a stand, you know, for whatever reason, and say it, you're making it so the next person can't say
that's
it as
right.
well. You know, there has to be a point, surely, where more people, and Trump is trying to empower people, or Trump is trying to give people the self-confidence to be true to their beliefs, whatever they are. I genuinely
Absolutely.
Believe that with Trump.
I call him the Great White Hope.
Yes, yes. The Great White Ginger Hope.
That's right.
Yeah.
Do you know who Piers Morgan is?
So, he's an Uber cockwomble. He's an Uber twat.
I was on his show.
Do you like him?
I was on his show.
Were you?
And
how nice of him to have you on.
No, you won't say that. As
I was joking. I was being sarcastic.
He was asking me about Black Lives Matter and racism and all that. And I said, there's no such thing as racism. It's a made-up lie.
Did he turn you down as you were talking?
You're absolutely right. And I said that Black Lives Matter is a far-left, liberal, radical organization,
group. Yeah.
Worse than the KKK. Founded by a bunch of black lesbians, and they cut me off.
That's so funny, because Piers Morgan, his modus operandi, bear in mind, he was the editor of a newspaper in the UK, a big, well-read newspaper called The Mirror, and he put on the front cover of that newspaper images of our troops committing an offence by allegedly urinating on captive forces from a different army. I don't need to go into the right. detail massively, but he put that picture on the front cover of his newspaper, and it was a fake picture. It was a fraudulent
wow.
picture. And you can imagine for our British troops,
yeah.
the impact that would have, that as if they would be disrespectful to another force's army. And that's the same man. That's Piers Morgan. And suddenly he's been, you know, reinvented.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
been laundered. He's been, and all of a sudden he's the friendly face of morning TV. But, you know, there are a great many people in the UK who remember that picture. All
I
of
bet.
My forces friends
Good.
Will not forgive that picture.
That's right.
So, you know, don't imagine that he's the big nice guy of the
right,
UK.
I
he's
don't.
Not. And his opinion blows in the wind.
Yes.
If he needs to be left-wing today, he's left-wing. If it needs to be pro-Trump today, he's pro-Trump.
Amazing.
And he would have had you on thinking that you were a black guy who was going to say the things he would like a black guy to say. And I think that is entirely disrespectful to any gentleman or woman of color or any white person too. We don't have a script.
He's a beta male.
He is so beta. People say I have bigger bollocks
you do.
Than Piers Morgan.
Absolutely.
I think it's true.
Fat shaming.
Oh,
you
yes.
are known for fat shaming. I'm watching your video and these fat people sitting there. You're like, no, 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 no.
You've had people that
call
fill
it whatever
these
you want, but it's fat.
Yes. So these seats do remind me a bit of I did a documentary called My Fat Story.
Yes.
And I put on, so I'm, you do, do how do you do weight here? Do you do it in stones or pounds? You
pounds,
do it in pounds,
pounds,
don't you? So I'm like 130, I was like 130 pounds, right?
Yeah.
So I said, I know, because fat people really annoy me when they don't own the fact that it's their fault they're fat.
Right.
Like if you just want to go and be fat,
That's
be
right.
fat.
That's
Great,
right.
fine, kill yourself, no drama. But if you want me to feel sorry for you for your fat, or to imagine it's not your fault, or that you've got fat bones, or that fat runs in your family, that's not going to happen. So I put on, I said, right, I'll put on half my body weight, 60 pounds, and lose it again to prove that I can be fat and fat people are lazy. And so I did that.
That's right.
So I took 3 months, I put on half my body weight, I was huge and fat, I had this huge thing here. And I thought, right, this is going to be great. I'm going to put on 60 pounds on my boobs, sorry for this. So I had these huge boobs, I was really excited.
Right.
And that didn't happen. I put it all on here.
On the belly.
So then I was like, people thought I was pregnant. I got given first in the queue in the bathroom. People let me go in front to the queue in the
really?
Bathroom. Yeah. I got sent flowers for the baby I wasn't having. And so then I lost it again in 3 months as well, to show that all you have to do is eat a bit less, move a bit more,
that's right.
and you won't be as fat.
That's
so,
right.
So that's all. It wasn't really fat shaming. It was just saying, the only way you'll lose weight is by knowing you've got a problem and you can solve
it. That's right. Yeah, I need three quick things happening. Your impression of the great white hope, President Trump.
I love Donald Trump. I knew he would win. I know he will win in 2020. And I believe he was sent here. He's been placed here. His moment is right now because he is the person who can actually save the free world and our Christian culture, Judeo-Christian culture that we need to defend. I believe he's placed here for that purpose.
Number two, what is a man?
A man is someone who is not afraid of a woman who works like him, but is also prepared to defend a woman if she needs help or if she needs support.
Amazing. Number three, what is love?
Love and hate are closely aligned. But love for me is the willingness to commit anything, that your own life is not as important as the thing you love. And for me, that's true for my country, that's true for my family, and that's true for my beliefs. If that costs at any point my life to defend any of those things, that's a price I'm absolutely willing to pay and something I accepted a long time ago.
And my final question, did you have fun?
In my life, I had a lot of fun already, and I had real fun meeting you, and I'm very grateful to you and your team for having me on.
Right on. Thanks for watching The Fallen State. We need your continued support. Donate to my nonprofit here. Subscribe and like the videos here. And tell everybody and their mama about the show.